Kang approached, his footfalls thudding on the glass bridge.
"My one regret," the king said to her, "is that I did not get to take my time."
She backed up a step, just one. The king drew Nothung.
"I'll take my time with you, though."
Aelin lifted her sword in both hands. Then,
"What did you say?"
"Dorian." The voice was hoarse, broken. The king and Aelin both turned toward the prince. But Dorian's eyes were on his father, and they were burning like stars.
"What did you say about Kaol?"
The king snapped.
"Silence!"
"Did you kill him?"
Not a question. Aelin's lips began trembling, and she tunneled down, down, down inside herself.
"And if I did?"
the king said, brows high.
"Did you kill Kaol?"
The light at Dorian's hand burned and burned, but the collar remained around his neck.
"You,"
the king snapped, and Aelin realized he meant her, just as a spear of darkness shot for her so fast, too fast. The darkness shattered against a wall of ice. Dorian. His name was Dorian. Dorian Haveliard, and he was the crown prince of Otterlin. And Selena Sardothian, Aelin Galathinius, his friend, she had come back for him. She faced him, an ancient sword in her hands.
"Dorian?"
she breathed. The demon inside him was screaming and pleading, ripping at him, trying to bargain. A wave of black slammed into the shield of ice he'd thrown up between the princess and his father. Soon, soon the king would break through it. Dorian lifted his hands to the wordstone collar, cold, smooth, thrumming.
"Don't," the demon shrieked. "Don't!"
There were tears running down Aelin's face as Dorian gripped the black stone encircling his throat. And, bellowing his grief, his rage, his pain, he snapped the collar from his neck. Chapter 77. The wordstone collar broke in two, severing along a hairline fracture where the ring's power had sliced through. Dorian was panting, and blood was running from his nose, but...
"Aelin,"
he gasped out. And the voice was his. It was him. She ran, sheathing the sword of Orinth, reaching his side as the wall of ice exploded beneath a hammer of darkness. The king's power surged for them, and Aelin flung out a single hand. A shield of fire blasted into existence, and the darkness was shoved back.
"Neither of you are leaving here alive,"
the king said, his rough voice slithering through the fire. Dorian sagged against her, and Aelin slipped a hand around his waist to hold him up. Pain flickered in her gut, and a throbbing began in her blood. She couldn't hold out, not so unprepared, even as the sun held at its peak, as if Mala herself willed it to linger just a little longer to amplify the gifts she'd already showered on a princess of Terrasen.
"Dorian,"
Aelin said, pain lancing down her spine as burnout neared. He turned his head, an eye still on the wall of flickering flames. Such pain, and grief, and rage in those eyes. Yet somehow, beneath it all, a spark of spirit, of hope. Aelin extended her hand, a question and an offer and a promise.
"To a better future," she said.
"You came back,"
he said, as if that were an answer. They joined hands. So the world ended, and the next one began. They were infinite. They were the beginning and the ending. They were eternity. The king standing before them gaped as the shield of flame died out to reveal Aelin and Dorian, hand in hand, glowing like newborn gods as their magic entwined.
"You're mine,"
the man raged. He became darkness, folded himself into the power he carried, as if he were nothing but malice on a dark wind. He struck them, swallowed them. But they held tighter to each other, past and present and future, flickering between an ancient hall and a mountain castle perched above Orinth, a bridge suspended between glass towers, and another place, perfect and strange, where they had been crafted from stardust and light. A wall of night knocked them back, but they could not be contained. The darkness paused for breath. They erupted. Rowan blinked against the sunlight as it poured from beyond Adian. Soldiers had infiltrated the sewers again, even after Lysandra had saved their sorry asses. Lorcan had rushed back, bloodied, and told them the way out was barred, and whatever way Lysandra had gotten in was now overrun. With battlefield efficiency, Rowan had healed his leg as best he could with his remaining power. While he'd patched himself up, bone and skin knitting together hastily enough to make him bark in pain, Adian and Lorcan clawed a path through the cave-in, just as the sewer had filled with the sounds of the soldiers rushing in. They'd hauled ass back to the castle grounds, where they hit another cave-in. Adian had started ripping at the top of it, shouting and roaring at the earth as if his will alone could move it. But now there was a hole. It was all Rowan needed. Rowan shifted, his leg flashing in agony as he exchanged his limbs for wings and talons. He loosed a cry, shrill and raging. A white-tailed hawk soared out of the small opening, past Adian. Rowan did not linger as he took in his surroundings. They were somewhere in the castle gardens, the glass castle looming beyond. The reek of the smoke from the ruin of the clock tower clogged his senses. Light exploded from the uppermost castle spires, so bright that he was blinded for a moment. Aelin. Alive. Alive. He flapped, bending the wind to his will with the dregs of his magic, soaring faster and faster. He sent another wind toward the clock tower, rerouting the smoke toward the river, away from them. Rowan rounded the corner of the castle. He had no words for what he saw. The King of Otterlin bellowed as Aelin and Dorian fractured his power. Together they broke down every spell, every ounce of evil that he'd bent and shackled to his command. Infinite. Dorian's power was infinite. They were full of light, of fire and starlight and sunshine. They overflowed with it as they snapped the final tether on the king's power and cleaved his darkness away, burning it up until it was nothing. The king fell to his knees, the glass bridge thudding with the impact. Aelin released Dorian's hand. Cold emptiness flooded her so violently that she too fell to the glass floor, gulping down air, reeling herself back in, remembering who she was. Dorian was staring at his father, the man who had broken him, enslaved him. In a voice she had never heard, the king whispered, "My boy." Dorian didn't react. The king gazed up at his son, his eyes wide, bright, and said again, "My boy." Then the king looked to where she was on her knees, gaping at him.
"Have you come to save me at last, Aelin Galathinius?"
Chapter 78. Aelin Galathinius stared at the butcher of her family, her people, her continent.
"Don't listen to his lies,"
Dorian said, flat and hollow. Aelin studied the king's hand, where the dark ring had been shattered away. Only a pale band of skin remained.
"Who are you?" she said quietly.
"Human." More and more the king looked.
"Human. Softer."
The king turned to Dorian, exposing his broad palms.
"Everything I did, it was all to keep you safe. From him."
Aelin went still.
"I found the key,"
the king went on, the words tumbling out.
"I found the key and brought it to Morath, and he, Parrington, we were young, and he took me under the keep to show me the crypt, even though it was forbidden. But I opened it with the key."
Tears,
Real and clear flowed down his ruddy face.
I opened it, and he came. He took Parrington's body and...
He gazed at his bare hand, watched it shake.
He let his minion take me.
That's enough, Dorian said. Aelin's heart stumbled.
Erewhon is free,
she breathed. And not only free. Erewhon was Parrington. The Dark King himself had manhandled her, lived in this castle with her, and had never known, by luck or fate or Elena's own protection, that she was here. She had never known either, never detected it on him.
Gods above.
Erewhon had forced her to bow that day in Endovir, and neither of them had scented or marked what the other was. The king nodded, setting his tears splattering on his tunic.
The eye. You could have sealed him back in with the eye.
The look on the king's face when she'd revealed the necklace. He'd been seeing a tool not of destruction, but of salvation. Aelin said, How is it possible he's been inside Parrington all this time and no one noticed?
He can hide inside a body like a snail in its shell, but cloaking his presence also stifles his own abilities to scent others, like you. And now you are back. All the players in the unfinished game. The Galathinius line, and the Havilyard, which he has hated so fiercely all this time. Why he targeted my family, and yours.
You butchered my kingdom,
she managed to say. That night her parents died. There had been that smell in the room. The scent of the Vog. You slaughtered millions.
I tried to stop it.
The king braced a hand on the bridge, as if to keep from collapsing under the weight of the shame now coating his words.
They could find you based on your magic alone, and wanted the strongest of you for themselves. And when you were born...
His craggy features crumpled as he again addressed Dorian.
You were so strong, so precious. I couldn't let them take you. I wrested control away for just long enough.
To do what? Dorian said hoarsely. Aelin glanced at the smoke wafting toward the river far beyond.
To order the towers built, she said,
and use that spell to banish magic. And now that they had freed magic, the magic wielders would be sniffed out by every Vog demon in Aurelia. The king gasped a shuddering breath.
But he didn't know how I'd done it. He thought the magic vanished as punishment from our gods, and knew nothing of why the towers were built. All this time I used my strength to keep the knowledge of it away from him. From them, all my strength. So I could not fight the demon. Stop it when it did those things. I kept that knowledge safe.
He's a liar, Dorian said, turning on his heel. There was no mercy in his voice. I still wound up able to use my magic. It didn't protect me at all. He'll say anything.
The wicked will tell us anything to haunt our thoughts long after,
Nehemia had warned her.
I didn't know, the king pleaded. Using my blood in the spell must have made my line immune. It was a mistake. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. My boy, Dorian.
You don't get to call him that, Aelin snapped. You came to my home and murdered my family.
I came to find you. I came to have you burn it out of me. The king sobbed. Aelin of the Wildfire. I tried to get you to do it, but your mother knocked you unconscious before you could kill me, and then the demon became so devoted to wiping out your line after that, so no fire could ever cleanse him from me.
Aelin's blood turned to ice.
No.
No, it couldn't be true. Couldn't be right.
All of it was to find you,
the king said to her,
so you could save me. So you could end me at last. Please, do it.
The king was weeping now, and his body seemed to waste away bit by bit, his cheeks hollowing out, his hands thinning. As if his life force and the demon prince inside him had indeed been bonded, and one could not exist without the other.
Kaol is alive,
the king murmured through his emaciated hands, lowering them to reveal red-rimmed eyes, already milky with age.
Broken, but I didn't make the kill. There was a light around him,
I left him alive.
A sob ripped from her throat. She had hoped, had tried to give him a shot at survival.
You are a liar,
Dorian said again, his voice cold, so cold.
And you deserve this.
Light sparked at Dorian's fingertips. Aelin mouthed his name, trying to reel herself back in, gather her wits. The demon inside the king had hunted her not because of the threat Terrasen posed, but for the fire in her veins. The fire that could end them both. She lifted a hand as Dorian stepped toward his father. They had to ask more, learn more. The crown prince tipped his head back to the sky and roared, and it was the battle cry of a god. Then the glass castle shattered. Chapter 79. The bridge exploded from beneath her, and the world turned into shards of flying glass. Aelin plummeted into open air, towers crashing down around her. She flung out her magic in a cocoon, burning through the glass as she fell and fell and fell. People were screaming. Screaming as Dorian brought the castle down for Kaol, for Sorsha, and sent a tidal wave of glass rushing toward the city lying below. Down and down Aelin went, the ground surging up, the buildings around her rupturing, the light so bright on all the fragments. Aelin pulled out every last drop of her magic as the castle collapsed, the lethal wave of glass cascading toward Rifthold. Wildfire raced for the gates, raced against the wind, against death. And as the wave of glass crested the iron gates, shredding through the corpses tied there as if they were paper, a wall of fire erupted before it, shooting sky high, spreading wide, halting it. A wind shoved against her, brutal and unforgiving, her bones groaning as it pushed her up, not down. She didn't care. Not when she yielded the entirety of her magic, the entirety of her being, to holding the barrier of flame now shielding Rifthold. A few more seconds, then she could die. The wind tore at her, and it sounded like it was roaring her name. Wave after wave of glass and debris slammed into her wildfire. But she kept that wall of flame burning. For the royal theater, and the flower girls at the market. For the slaves and the courtesans and the Falik family. For the city that had offered her joy and pain, death and rebirth. For the city that had given her music. Aelin kept that wall of fire burning bright. There was blood raining down among the glass. Blood that sizzled on her little cocoon aflame, reeking of darkness and pain. The wind kept blowing, until it swept that dark blood away. Still, Aelin held the shield around the city, held on to the final promise she'd made to Kaol. I'll make it count. She held on until the ground rose up to meet her, and she landed softly in the grass. Then darkness slammed into the back of her head. The world was so bright. Aelin Galathinius groaned as she pushed herself onto her elbows, the small hill of grass beneath her untouched and vibrant. Only a moment. She'd been out for only a moment. She raised her head, her skull throbbing as she shoved her unbound hair from her eyes and looked at what she had done. What Dorian had done. The glass castle was gone. Only the stone castle remained, its gray stones warming under the midday sun. And where a cascade of glass and debris should have destroyed a city, a massive opaque wall glittered. A wall of glass, its upper lip curved as if it had indeed been cresting a wave. The glass castle was gone. The king was dead, and Dorian, Aelin scrambled up, her arms buckling under her. There, not 3 feet away, was Dorian, sprawled on the grass, eyes closed. But his chest was rising and falling. Beside him, as if some benevolent god had indeed been looking after them, lay Kaol. His face was bloody, but he breathed. No other wounds that she could detect. She began shaking, She wondered if he had noticed when she'd slipped the real eye of Elena into his pocket as she'd fled the throne room. The scent of pine and snow hit her, and she realized how they had survived the fall. Aelin got to her feet, swaying. The sloping hill down to the city had been demolished, its trees and lampposts and greenery shredded by the glass. She didn't want to know about the people who had been on the grounds, or in the castle. She forced herself to walk. Toward the wall, toward the panicked city beyond, toward the new world that beckoned. Two scents converged, then a third, a strange wild scent that belonged to everything and nothing. But Aelin did not look at Adian, or Rowan, or Lysandra, as she descended the hill to the city. Every step was an effort, every breath a trial to pull herself back from the brink, to hold on to the here and now, and what had to be done. Aelin approached the towering glass wall that now separated the castle from the city, that separated death from life. She punched a battering ram of blue flame through it. More yelling arose as the flame ate away at the glass, forming an archway. The people beyond, crying and holding one another, or gripping their heads or covering their mouths, went quiet as she strode through the door she'd made. The gallows still stood just beyond the wall. It was the only raised surface that she could see. Better than nothing. Aelin ascended the butchering block, her court falling into rank behind her. Rowan was limping, but she didn't allow herself to examine him, to even ask if he was all right. Not yet. Aelin kept her shoulders back, her face grave and unyielding as she stopped at the edge of the platform. "Your king is dead," she said. The crowd stirred. "Your prince lives."
"All hail Dorian Havilyard," someone shouted down the street.
No one else echoed it. "My name is Aelin Ashriver Galathinius," she said, "and I am the Queen of Terrasen." The crowd murmured. Some onlookers stepped away from the platform. "Your prince is in mourning. Until he is ready, this city is mine." Absolute silence. "If you loot, if you riot, if you cause one lick of trouble," she said, looking a few in the eye, "I will find you and I will burn you to ash." She lifted a hand, and flames danced at her fingertips. "If you revolt against your new king, if you try to take his castle, then this wall," she gestured with her burning hand, "will turn to molten glass and flood your streets, your homes, your throats." Aelin lifted her chin, her mouth cutting a hard, unforgiving line as she surveyed the crowd filling the streets. People craning to see her, see the fey ears and elongated canines, see the flames flickering around her fingers. "I killed your king. His empire is over. Your slaves are now free people. If I catch you holding on to your slaves, if I hear of any household keeping them captive, you are dead. If I hear of you whipping a slave or trying to sell one, you are dead. So I suggest that you tell your friends and families and neighbors. I suggest that you act like reasonable, intelligent people. And I suggest that you stay on your best behavior until your king is ready to greet you, at which time I swear on my crown that I will yield control of this city to him. If anyone has a problem with it, you can take it up with my court." She motioned behind her. Rowan, Adian, and Lysandra, bloodied, battered, filthy, grinned like hellions. "Or," Aelin said, the flames winking out on her hand, "you can take it up with me." Not a word. She wondered whether they were breathing. But Aelin didn't care as she strode off the platform, back through the gate she'd made, and all the way up the barren hillside to the stone castle. She was barely inside the oak doors before she collapsed to her knees and wept. Chapter 80. Aelin had been in the dungeon so long that she'd lost track of time. But she'd felt that ripple in the world, could have sworn she heard the wind singing her name, heard panicked shouts, and then nothing. No one explained what it was, and no one came. No one was coming for her. She wondered how long Vernon would wait before he gave her to one of those things. She tried counting meals to track time, but the food they gave her was the same for breakfast and dinner, and her mealtimes changed around, as if they wanted her to lose track. As if they wanted her to fold herself into the darkness of the dungeon, so that when they came for her, she'd be willing, desperate just to see the sun again. The door to her cell clicked open, and she staggered to her feet as Vernon slipped inside. He left the door ajar behind him, and she blinked at the torchlight as it stung her eyes. The stone hallway beyond was empty. He probably hadn't brought guards with him. He knew how futile running would be for her.
I'm glad to see they've been feeding you.
A shame about the smell, though. She refused to be embarrassed by it. Smell was the least of her concerns. Aleid pressed herself against the slick, freezing stone wall. Maybe if she got lucky, she'd find a way to get the chain around his throat.
I'll send someone to clean you up tomorrow.
Vernon began to turn, as if his inspection were done.
For what?
She managed to ask. Her voice was already hoarse with disuse. He looked over his thin shoulder.
Now that magic has returned.
Magic. That was what the ripple had been.
I want to learn what lies dormant in your bloodline. Our bloodline. The Duke is even more curious what will come of it.
Please, she said. I'll disappear. I'll never bother you. Perantha's yours. It's all yours. You've won. Just let me go.
Vernon clicked his tongue.
I do like it when you beg.
He glanced into the hall beyond and snapped his fingers. Cormac? A young man stepped into view. He was a man of unearthly beauty, with a flawless face beneath his red hair. But his green eyes were cold and distant, horrific. There was a black collar around his throat. Darkness leaked from him in tendrils, and as his eyes met with hers, memories tugged at her, horrible memories, of a leg that had slowly broken, of years of terror, of...
Leash it, Vernon snapped, or she'll be no fun for you tomorrow.
The red-haired young man sucked the darkness back into himself, and the memories stopped. Aleid vomited her last meal onto the stones. Vernon chuckled.
Don't be so dramatic, Aleid.
A little incision, a few stitches,
and you'll be perfect.
The demon prince smiled at her.
You'll be given into his care afterward to make sure that everything takes as it should. But with magic so strong in your bloodline, how could it not? Perhaps you'll outshine those yellow legs. After the first time, Vernon mused, maybe His Highness will even perform his own experiments with you. The acquaintance that sold him out mentioned in his letter that Cormac enjoyed playing with young women when he lived in Rifthold.
Oh, gods. Oh, gods. Why?
She begged. Why? Vernon shrugged.
Because I can.
He walked out of the cell, taking the demon prince, her betrothed, with him. As soon as the door clicked shut, Aleid bolted for it, yanking on the handle, tugging until the metal bit into her hands and rubbed them raw, begging Vernon, begging anyone to hear her, remember her. But there was no one. Manon was more than ready to fall into bed at last, after all that had happened. She hoped that the young queen was lingering around Rifthold and had understood the message. The halls of the keep were in an uproar, bustling with messengers who avoided looking at her. Whatever it was, she didn't care. She wanted to bathe and then sleep. For days. When she awoke, she'd tell Aleid what she'd learned about her queen. The final piece of the life debt she owed. Manon shouldered into her room. Aleid's pallet of hay was tidy. The room spotless. The girl was probably skulking about somewhere, spying on whoever seemed most useful to her. Manon was halfway to the bathing room when she noticed the smell. Or lack of it. Aleed's scent was worn, stale, as if she hadn't been here for days. Manon looked toward the fire. No embers. She reached a hand over it, not a hint of warmth. Manon scanned the room. No signs of a struggle, but... Manon was out the door the next moment, headed back downstairs. She made it 3 steps before her prowl turned into a full-on sprint. She took the stairs 2 and 3 at a time and leaped the last 10 feet onto the landing, the impact shuddering through her legs, now strong, so wickedly strong, with magic returned. If there had been a time for Vernon to get back at her for taking Aleed from him, it would have been while she was away. And if magic ran in Aleed's family along with the Iron Teeth blood in her veins, its return might have awakened something.
"They want kings,"
Caltaine had said that day. Hall after hall, stairwell after stairwell, Manon ran, her iron nails sparking as she gripped corners to swing herself around. Servants and guards darted out of her way. She reached the kitchens moments later, Iron Teeth out. Everyone went dead silent as she leaped down the stairs, heading right for the head cook. "Where is she?" The man's ruddy face went pale.
"Who?"
"The girl, Aleed. Where is she?" The cook's spoon clattered to the floor.
"I don't know. I haven't seen her in days, Wingleader. She sometimes volunteers at the laundry, so maybe..."
Manon was already sprinting out. The head laundress, a haughty bull, snorted and said she hadn't seen Aleed, and perhaps the cripple had gotten what was coming to her. Manon left her screaming on the floor, 4 lines gouged across her face. Manon hurtled up the stairs and across an open stone bridge between 2 towers, the black rock smooth against her boots. She had just reached the other side when a woman shouted from the opposite end of the bridge,
"Wingleader!"
Manon slammed to a stop so hard she almost collided with the tower wall. When she whirled, a human woman in a homespun gown was running for her, reeking of whatever soaps and detergents they used in the laundry. The woman gulped down great breaths of air, her dark skin flushed. She had to brace her hands on her knees to catch her breath, but then she lifted her head and said,
"One of the laundresses sees a guard who works in the keep dungeons. She said that Aleed's locked up down there. No one's allowed in but her uncle. Don't know what they're planning to do, but it can't be good."
"What dungeons?" There were 3 different ones here, along with the catacombs in which they kept the Yellowlegs coven.
"She didn't know. He'll only tell her so much. Some of us girls were trying to see if there was anything to be done, but..."
"Tell no one that you spoke to me." Manon turned. 3 dungeons, 3 possibilities.
"Wingleader,"
the young woman said. Manon looked over her shoulder. The woman put a hand on her heart.
"Thank you."
Manon didn't let herself think about the laundress's gratitude, or what it meant for those weak, helpless humans to have even considered trying to rescue Aleed on their own. She did not think that woman's blood would be watery or taste of fear. Manon launched into a sprint. Not to the dungeon, but to the witch's barracks. To the 13. Chapter 81. Aleed's uncle sent 2 stone-faced female servants down to scrub her, both bearing buckets of water. She tried to fight when they stripped her, but the women were walls of iron. Any sort of blackbeak blood in Aleed's veins, she realized, had to be the diluted kind. When she was naked before them, they dumped the water on her and attacked her with their brushes and soaps, not even hesitating as they washed her everywhere, even when she shrieked at them to stop. A sacrificial offering, a lamb to the slaughter. Shaking, weak from the effort of fighting them, Aleed had hardly any strength to retaliate as they dragged combs through her hair, yanking hard enough that her eyes watered. They left it unbound, and dressed her in a plain green robe, with nothing beneath. Aleed begged them, over and over. They might as well have been deaf. When they left, she tried to squeeze out the cell door after them. The guards shoved her back in with a laugh. Aleed backed up until she was pressed against the wall of her cell. every minute was closer to her last. A stand. She'd make a stand. She was a Blackbeak, and her mother had secretly been one, and they would both go down swinging. Force them to gut her, to kill her before they could touch her, before they could implant that stone inside her, before she could birth those monsters. The door clicked open. Four guards appeared.
"The prince is waiting in the catacombs."
Aleid dropped to her knees, shackles clanking. "Please, please."
"Now."
Two of them shoved into the cell, and she couldn't fight back against the hands that grabbed under her arms and dragged her toward that door. Her bare feet tore on the stones as she kicked and thrashed, despite the chain, trying to claw free. Closer and closer, they hauled her like a bucking horse toward the open cell door. The two waiting guards sniggered, eyes on the flap of the robe that fell open as she kicked, revealing her thighs, her stomach, everything to them. Aleid sobbed, even as she knew the tears would do her no good. They just laughed, devouring her with their eyes. Until a hand with glittering iron nails shoved through the throat of one of them, puncturing it wholly. The guards froze, the one at the door whirling at the spray of blood. He screamed as his eyes were slashed into ribbons by one hand, his throat shredded by another. Both guards collapsed to the ground, revealing Manon Blackbeak standing behind them. Blood ran down her hands, her forearms. And Manon's golden eyes glowed as if they were living embers as she looked at the two guards gripping Aleid, as she beheld the disheveled robe. They released Aleid to grab their weapons, and she sagged to the floor. Manon just said, "You're already dead men." And then she moved. Aleid didn't know if it was magic, but she'd never seen anyone in her life move like that, as if she were a phantom wind. Manon snapped the neck of the first guard with a brutal crunch. As the second lunged for her, Aleid scrambling out of the way, Manon only laughed and twirled away, moving behind him to plunge her hand into his back, into his body. His shriek blasted through the cell. Flesh tore, revealing a white column of bone, his spine, which she gripped, her nails shredding deep, and broken too. Aleid trembled, at the man who fell to the ground, bleeding and broken, and at the witch standing over him, bloodied and panting, the witch who had come for her.
"We need to run," Manon said.
Manon knew rescuing Aleid would be a statement, and knew there were others who would want to make it with her. But chaos had broken out in the keep, as she had raced to summon her 13. News had come. The King of Otterlin was dead, destroyed by Aelin Galathinius. She had shattered his glass castle, used her fire to spare the city from a deadly wave of glass, and declared Dorian Havilyard King of Otterlin. The witch killer had done it. People were in a panic. Even the witches were looking to her for answers. What would they do now that the mortal king was dead? Where would they go? Were they free of their bargain? Later. Manon would think of those things later. Now she had to act. So she had found her 13 and ordered them to get the wyverns saddled and ready. Three dungeons. "Hurry, Blackbeak," whispered a strange, soft female voice in her head that was at once old and young and wise. "You race against doom." Manon had hit the nearest dungeon, Asterin, Sorrel, and Vesta at her back, the green-eyed demon twins behind them. Men began dying, fast and bloody. No use arguing, not when the men took one look at them and drew their weapons. The dungeon held rebels of all kingdoms, who pleaded for death when they saw them, in such states of unspeakable torment that even Manon's stomach turned. But no sign of Aleid. They had swept the dungeon, Faelin and Fallon lingering to make sure they hadn't missed anything. The second dungeon held more of the same. Vesta stayed this time to sweep it again. "Faster, Blackbeak," that wise female voice begged her, as if there were only so much she might interfere. "Faster." Manon ran like hell. The third dungeon was above the catacombs, and so heavily guarded that black blood became a mist around them as they launched themselves into tier after tier of soldiers. Not one more. Not one more female would she allow them to take. Sorrel and Asterin plunged into the soldiers, plowing a path for her. Asterin ripped out the throat of one man with her teeth while she gutted another with her nails. Black blood sprayed from Asterin's mouth as she pointed to the stairs ahead and roared, "Go!" So Manon had left her second and third behind, leaping down the stairs, around and around. There had to be a secret entrance from these dungeons into the catacombs, some quiet way to transport a lead. "Faster, Blackbeak!" that sage voice barked. And as a little wind pushed at Manon's feet, as if it could hurry her along, she knew that it was a goddess peering over her shoulder, a lady of wise things, who perhaps had watched over a lead her entire life, muted without magic, but now that it was free. Manon hit the lowest level of the dungeon, a mere floor above the catacombs. Sure enough, at the end of the hall, a door opened onto a descending staircase. Between her and that staircase were two guards sniggering at an open cell door as a young woman begged for their mercy. It was the sound of Elide's weeping, that girl of quiet steel and quicksilver wit who had not wept for herself or her sorry life, only faced it with grim determination, that made Manon snap entirely. She killed those guards in the hall. She saw what they had been laughing at. The girl gripped between two other guards, her robe tugged open to reveal her nakedness, the full extent of that ruined leg. Her grandmother had sold them to these people. She was a Blackbeak. She was no one's slave, no one's prize horse to breed. Neither was Elide. Her wrath was a song in her blood, and Manon had merely said, "You're already dead men," before she unleashed herself on them. When she'd chucked the last guard's body onto the ground, when she was covered in black and blue blood, Manon looked at the girl on the floor. Elide tugged her green robe shut, shaking so badly Manon thought she'd puke. She could smell vomit already in the cell. They had kept her here, in this rotting place. "We need to run," Manon said. Elide tried to rise, but couldn't so much as get to her knees. Manon stalked to her, helping the girl to her feet, leaving a smear of blood on her forearm. Elide swayed, but Manon was looking at the old chain around her ankles. With a swipe of her iron nails, she snapped through it. She'd unlock the shackles later. "Now," Manon said, tugging Elide into the hall. There were more soldiers shouting from the way she'd come, and Asterin and Sorrel's battle cries rang out down the stairs. But behind them, from the catacombs below, more men. Volg, curious about the clamor leaking in from above. Bringing Elide into the melee might very well kill her. But if the soldiers from the catacombs attacked from behind, worse, if they brought one of their princes. Regret. It had been regret she'd felt that night she'd killed the Kraken. Regret and guilt and shame. For acting on blind obedience. For being a coward when the Kraken had held her head high and spoken truth. "They have made you into monsters. Made, Manon. And we feel sorry for you." It was regret that she'd felt when she heard Asterin's tale, for not being worthy of trust, and for what she had allowed to happen to those yellow legs. She did not want to imagine what she might feel should she bring Elide to her death, or worse. Brutality, discipline, obedience. It did not seem like a weakness to fight for those who could not defend themselves, even if they weren't true witches, even if they meant nothing to her. "We're going to have to battle our way out," Manon said to Elide. But the girl was wide-eyed, gaping at the cell doorway. Standing there, her dress flowing around her like liquid night, was Kaltane. Chapter 82. Elide stared at the dark-haired young woman, and Kaltane stared back. Manon let out a warning snarl.
Unless you want to die, get the rotting hell out of the way.
Kaltane, her hair unbound, her face pale and gaunt, said, They are coming now, to find out why she has not yet arrived.
Manon's bloodied hand was sticky and damp as it clamped around Alid's arm and tugged her toward the door. The single step, the freedom of movement without that chain. Alid almost sobbed. Until she heard the fighting ahead. Behind them, from the dark stairwell at the other end of the hall, the rushing feet of more men approached from far below. Kaltane stepped aside as Manon pushed past.
Wait, Kaltane said. They will turn this keep upside down looking for you. Even if you get airborne, they will send out riders after you and use your own people against you, Blackbeak.
Manon dropped Alid's arm. Alid hardly dared to breathe, as the witch said. How long has it been since you destroyed the demon inside that collar, Kaltane? A low, broken laugh.
A while.
Does the Duke know?
My dark liege sees what he wants to see.
She shifted her eyes to Alid. Exhaustion, emptiness, sorrow, and rage danced there together.
Remove your robe and give it to me.
Alid backed up a step.
What?
Manon looked between them. You can't trick them.
They see what they want to see, Kaltane said again.
The men closing in on either side grew nearer with every uneven heartbeat.
This is insane, Alid breathed. It'll never work.
Take off your robe and give it to the lady, Manon ordered. Do it now. No room for disobedience. So Alid listened, blushing at her own nakedness, trying to cover herself. Kaltane merely let her black dress slip from her shoulders. It rippled on the ground. Her body, what they had done to her body, the bruises on her, the thinness. Kaltane wrapped herself in the robe, her face empty again. Alid slid on the gown, its fabric horribly cold when it should have been warm. Kaltane knelt before one of the dead guards.
Oh, gods, those were corpses lying there.
And ran her hand over the hole in the guard's neck. She smeared and flicked blood over her face, her neck, her arms, the robe. She ran it through her hair, tugging it forward, hiding her face until bits of blood were all that could be seen, folding her shoulders inward until Kaltane looked like Alid.
You could be sisters,
Vernon had said. Now they could be twins.
Please, come with us. Alid whispered.
Kaltane laughed quietly.
Dagger, Blackbeak.
Manon pulled out a dagger. Kaltane sliced it deep into the hideous scarred lump in her arm.
In your pocket, girl,
Kaltane said to her. Alid reached into the dress and pulled out a scrap of dark fabric, frayed and ripped at the edges, as if it had been torn from something. Alid held it toward the lady as Kaltane reached into her arm. No expression of pain on that beautiful, bloodied face, and pulled out a glimmering sliver of dark stone. Kaltane's red blood dripped off it. Carefully, the lady set it onto the scrap of fabric Alid held out, and folded Alid's fingers around it. A dull, strange thudding pounded through Alid as she grasped the shard. What is that? Manon asked, sniffing subtly. Kaltane just squeezed Alid's fingers.
You find Selena Sardothian. Give her this. No one else.
No one else. Tell her that you can open any door if you have the key.
And tell her to remember her promise to me,
to punish them all.
When she asks why, tell her I said that they would not let me bring the cloak she gave me, but I kept a piece of it. To remember that promise she made. To remember to repay her for a warm cloak in a cold dungeon.
Kaltane stepped away.
We can take you with us, Alid tried again.
A small, hateful smile.
I have no interest in living, not after what they did. I don't think my body could survive without their power.
Kaltane huffed a laugh.
I shall enjoy this, I think.
Manon tugged Alid to her side. They'll notice you without the chains.
They'll be dead before they do,
Kaltane said.
I suggest you run.
Manon didn't ask questions, and Aleed didn't have time to say thank you before the witch grabbed her, and they ran. She was a wolf. She was death, devourer of worlds. The guards found her curled up in the cell, shuddering at the carnage. They didn't ask questions, didn't look twice at her face before they hauled her down the hall and into the catacombs. Such screaming here. Such terror and despair. But the horrors under the other mountains were worse. So much worse. Too bad she would not have the opportunity to also spare them. Slaughter them. She was a void. Empty without that sliver of power that built and ate and tore apart worlds inside of her. His precious gift. His key, he had called her. A living gate, he promised. Soon, he had said he would add the other, and then find the third, so that the king inside him might rule again. They led her into a chamber with a table in the center. A white sheet covered it, and men watched as they shoved her onto the table. The altar. They chained her down. With the blood on her, they did not notice the cut on her arm, or whose face she wore. One of the men came forward with a knife, clean and sharp and gleaming.
This won't take but a few minutes.
Kaltane smiled up at him, smiled broadly, now that they had brought her into the bowels of this hellhole. The man paused. A red-haired young man walked into the room, reeking of the cruelty born in his human heart, and amplified by the demon inside him. He froze as he saw her. He opened his mouth. Kaltane Rompier unleashed her shadow fire upon them all. This was not the ghost of shadow fire they had made her kill with. The reason why they had first approached her, lied to her when they invited her to that glass castle. But the real thing. The fire she had harbored since magic had returned. Golden flame now turned to black. The room became cinders. Kaltane pushed the chains off her as though they were cobwebs, and arose. She disrobed as she walked out of the room. Let them see what had been done to her. The body they'd wasted. She made it two steps into the hall before they noticed her, and beheld the black flames rippling off her. Death, devourer of worlds. The hallway turned to black dust. She strode toward the chamber where the screaming was loudest, where female cries leaked through the iron door. The iron did not heat, did not bend to her magic. So she melted an archway through the stones. Monsters and witches and men and demons whirled. Kaltane flowed into the room, spreading her arms wide, and became shadow fire, became freedom and triumph, became a promise hissed in a dungeon beneath a glass castle. Punish them all. She burned the cradles. She burned the monsters within. She burned the men and their demon princes. And then she burned the witches, who looked at her with gratitude in their eyes and embraced the dark flame. Kaltane unleashed the last of her shadow fire, tipping her face to the ceiling, toward a sky she'd never see again. She took out every wall and every column. As she brought it all crashing and crumbling around them, Kaltane smiled, and at last burned herself into ash on a phantom wind. Manon ran, but Aleed was so slow, so painfully slow with that leg. If Kaltane unleashed her shadow fire before they got out. Manon grabbed Aleed and hauled her over a shoulder, the beaded dress cutting into Manon's hand as she sprinted up the stairs. Aleed didn't say a word as Manon reached the dungeon landing and beheld Astarin and Sorrel finishing off the last of the soldiers. Run, she barked. They were coated in that black blood. But they'd live. Up and up, they hurtled out of the dungeons, even as Aleed became a weight borne on pure defiance of the death surely racing toward them from levels below. There was a shudder.
Faster.
Her second made it to the giant dungeon doors and hurled herself against them, heaving them open. Manon and Sorrel dashed through. Astarin shoved them sealed with a bang. It would only delay the flame a second, if that. Up and up, toward the Eyrie. Another shudder and a boom, screaming and heat. Down the halls they flew, as if the god of wind were pushing at their heels. They hit the base of the Eyrie Tower. The rest of the 13 were gathered in the stairwell, waiting. "Into the skies," Manon ordered as they took the stairs, one after one, a lead so heavy now that she thought she'd drop her. Only a few more feet to the top of the tower, where the wyverns were hopefully saddled and prepared. They were. Manon hurtled for Abraxos and shoved the shuddering girl into the saddle. She climbed up behind her as the 13 scrambled onto their mounts. Wrapping her arms around Alid, Manon dug her heels into Abraxos' side. "Fly now," she roared. Abraxos leaped through the opening, soaring up and out, the 13 leaping with them, wings beating hard, beating wildly. Morath exploded. Black flame erupted, taking out stone and metal, racing higher and higher. People shouted and then were silenced, as even rock melted. The air hollowed out and ruptured in Manon's ears, and she curled her body around Elide's, twisting them so the heat of the blast singed her own back. The airy tower was incinerated and crumbled away behind them. The blast sent them tumbling, but Manon gripped the girl tight, clenching the saddle with her thighs as hot, dry wind blasted past them. Abraxos screeched, shifting and soaring into the gust. When Manon dared to look, a third of Morath was smoldering ruin. Where those catacombs had once been, where those yellow legs had been tortured and broken, where they had bred monsters, there was nothing left. Chapter 83. Aelin slept for 3 days. 3 days, while Rowan sat by her bed, healing his leg as best he could, while the abyss of his power refilled. Adian assumed control of the castle, imprisoning any surviving guards. Most, Rowan had been viciously pleased to learn, had been killed in the storm of glass the prince had called down. Kaol had survived by some miracle. Probably the Eye of Elaena, which they'd found tucked into his pocket. It was an easy guess who had put it there, though Rowan honestly wondered if, when the captain woke up, he might wish he hadn't made it after all. He'd encountered enough soldiers who felt that way. After Aelin had so spectacularly leashed the people of Rifthold, they found Lorkhan waiting by the doors to the stone castle. The queen hadn't even noticed him, as she sank to her knees and cried, until Rowan scooped her into his arms, and limping slightly, carried her through the frenzied halls, servants dodging them as Adian led the way to her old rooms. It was the only place to go. Better to establish themselves in their enemy's former stronghold than to retreat to the warehouse apartment. A servant named Philippa was asked to look after the prince, who had been unconscious the last time Rowan had seen him, when he plummeted to earth and Rowan's wind stopped his fall. He didn't know what had happened in the castle. Through her weeping, Aelin hadn't said anything. She had been unconscious by the time Rowan reached her lavish suite of rooms, not even stirring as he kicked open the locked door. His leg had burned in pain, the rough healing he'd done barely holding the wound together, but he didn't care. He'd barely set Aelin on the bed before Lorkhan's scent hit him again, and he whirled, snarling. But there was already someone in Lorkhan's face, blocking the warrior's path into the queen's bedchamber. Lysandra.
"May I help you?"
the courtesan had said sweetly. Her dress was in shreds, and blood both black and red coated most of her. But she held her head high and her back straight. She'd made it as far as the upper levels of the stone castle before the glass one above it had exploded, and showed no plans of leaving any time soon. Rowan had thrown a shield of hard air around Aelin's room as Lorkhan stared down at Lysandra, his blood-splattered face impassive.
"Out of my way, shifter."
Lysandra had held up a slender hand, and Lorkhan paused. The shapeshifter pressed her other hand against her stomach, her face blanching. But then she smiled and said,
"You forgot to say please."
Lorkhan's dark brows flattened. I don't have time for this. He made to step around her, shove her aside. Lysandra vomited black blood all over him. Rowan didn't know whether to let